It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco, Mike Elgin, and the return of Alex Lindsay. We're going to talk about the new iPhone. How big should it be? Also, Apple's response to privacy concerns and all the maple butter you can eat. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 292, recorded March 27th, 2012. The Squirrel and the Lion. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Get better connected to the people you depend on for success. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code MACBREAK. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. Upgrade to a premium domain and trade in your old clunkers. Visit MACBREAK.Hover.com. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, visit Squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK3. Welcome to Mac Break Weekly, the show that talks all about Macintosh, although there hasn't really been much to talk about lately. So we'll throw in iOS. Basically, it's anything Apple does, we will basically obsess about. Joining me for the first time in ages in studio, I'm so glad to have you, Mr. Alex Lindsay.
It's good to be back.
Who has been traveling around the world. Where? Just give us the last three cities you were in. I'm curious.
Chicago, London, D.C., New York. I don't know.
A lot of them. Well, welcome back. It's nice to have you. We missed you when you're not here.
I every Tuesday, I'm like, I feel I like something's missing.
I know.
Like,
I should be talking about Mac.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, Andy Iannocco is always here, and we love that. He's the rock, the Mr. Consistent.
Exactly. It's like Alex is the clutch performer who, like, he's a Reggie Jackson, who every time he comes up back, home run, clears the bases, wins a World Series. I'm just here to drive in the RBIs game after game, and then Cal Ripken, like, 40 years later, they realize, oh, wait. I want the perfect attendance medal, if nothing
You
else.
Should. He's now on his 7,843rd Mac Break Weekly without missing the show, Mr. Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times and the CWOB. Also joining us from Google+. He's not at Google. He just spends his life on Google+. Mr. Mike Elgin. Elgin, ELGAN.com. Hey, Mike. Ah, we figured out how to keep him quiet. Your mic is muted, Mike. You know, I thought I wasn't hearing anything from Mike.
Me too.
The silent Mike Elgin. Mike, you could just make, why don't you do, you could be the draw something guy and just draw, you know, do things with your hands.
It was when he put his headphones on.
Yeah, there you go.
How about now?
Yeah.
There we go.
Wow, what an ordeal.
We made him put on headphones. But now, Mike, can I just tell you, you sound wonderful.
My wife likes me better when I'm silent, so you may regret this.
Actually, we thought it'd be kind of fun. We do draw something. One person on every show would be the draw something guy, and you just have to draw your reaction on the screen.
That's a good idea.
We need a little Cintiq for that.
Hey, it made OMG pop $180 million. Wow. That's an amazing story.
It's always funny until you find out how much money they've made.
Apparently, I read that they were on their, like, the guy who had $1,700 in the bank. If draw something had not taken off, they had already something like 35 apps that just didn't really go anywhere, and they had, you know, as any startup does, they have a lot of just ongoing expenses, and they were down to their last $1,700, and they were ready to pull the plug. And then they come up with Draw Something in 6 weeks. I don't think there's been an app that's grown this fast ever in history, and in 6 weeks, they sold the company to Zynga for $180 million. From $1,700 to $180 million in 6 weeks, ladies and gentlemen. That is why the app economy is transforming America. Holy cow.
All I can say is, well played.
Yes.
Well played, sir.
I saw an infographic, and you know infographics never lie, that the app economy, if you include all the apps, iPhone, Android, and everything, has created 466,000 jobs in the U.S. I mean, since 2007, since the iPhone came out, that's a huge transformation.
Well, and I think that when we're talking about job growth in the United States especially or all around the world, I mean, I think that a lot of governments are still trying to figure out how to do quote-unquote shovel-ready projects, you know, and I think that they really need to be thinking
shovel-ready.
You know, that's the whole, you know, that's
you
why
can
we
just
have,
go.
You know, that's why they added that lane between here and Novato is because
right.
It was shovel ready and we could throw a bunch of money into it and hire a bunch of people. But that's not the future is trying to figure out how do we develop more people that can do what we're seeing here.
Yeah, I mean, presumably some of those 466,000 people were gainfully employed in as developers already. Mm-hmm. But
what's great about them is that it's sort of an entree into the world of software development and entrepreneurship. So people in high school or people with
right.
limited skills can actually build an app, sometimes succeed, sometimes not, but learn about it and connect with other people and sort of bring them into the world of entrepreneurship. And it's that to me, that's the best part of it.
There was a story about a guy named Shea Pierce who worked at OMG Pop. He was one of the developers. Apparently, the way it worked when Zynga bought OMG Pop, they—and this is often what happens in when a company buys another company. Essentially, everybody's fired, and then the new owner offers contracts to everybody, saying, "Okay, now you're terminated with OMG Pop. Now you're becoming a Zynga employee." And in this contract, according to this column that Shea Pierce wrote on Gamma Sutra. They said to him, okay, but everything you develop is ours, we own, and you cannot, anything that you, any, even side developments, anything you're doing at home in your own time, we own or you have to stop doing it. We don't want you competing with us in the marketplace. And Shea had written a game for his wife as an independent contractor. It was called Connectrode. It's on the App Store. He said, I designed it on my own. I did all the coding in my spare time. I contracted the visual and audio work to talented friends here in Austin. And I submitted it to the App Store shortly after my employment with OMG Pop began with the company's awareness and permission. He says, financially, it made me about as money as most spare time indie game projects. Not so hot. It never broke into the top 10. It never sold millions. It wasn't changing anyone's life. But I love it. I made it. My wife wanted me to make it. It's dedicated to my wife. The code has a special case so that on her phone, the dedication appears on every launch. Now, that's true love. That's nerd love.
It's like naming a hard drive after her.
Yeah.
Or a computer after your daughter, like the Lisa.
The Lisa. Example. Yeah, after your estranged daughter. After your unacknowledged daughter. Anyway, Zynga said, no, you either sign this contract as is and take Connectrode off the market. Or you don't have a job. And he said, why am I trying to work at Zynga anyway? I politely declined Zynga and became the only OMG Pop employee to be left behind. I don't have a job, but I could sleep soundly at night knowing I'm not working for any employer with whom I strongly disagree. He says, I wasn't screwed. I had a small amount of equity. I received compensation, and that was never at stake. I'm not bitter. But he said, I don't really like Zynga, and I don't want to go to work for him. Now, he's the only guy who didn't. So, but that's just the story there. And by the way, he says Zynga paid $210 million. So it's some dispute over how much money. Nevertheless,
it's a lot of money.
Anything over $100 million, I think, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. But aren't they kind of like shooting themselves in the foot like Zynga? Because if you don't allow your employees to have their own side projects, then you're kind of telling them, please don't think outside of the office. Please don't try.
Wait, there's a squirrel. Watch out. There's a squirrel. It's a squirrel. He's coming over your shoulder. What, Doc? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare the squirrel.
He's there looking after my interests.
He's looking after your nuts.
It's a barter trade. But yeah, no,
we'll explain that in a bit, folks.
maybe I should change my background to something a little less.
It's a little distracting, squirrel. So
I don't want to even guess as how you react when the grackles start appearing.
Oh well, Oh, did you see that? He just like grabbed it. So this is a.
I should package this as an app and sell it. It's exciting. Leo Laporte of This Week in Technology is raving about it.
I love this app. It made me cry. Oh look, he's putting more nuts out. So this is the video, but for those of you listening, Andy has, as always, a screen behind him, and it's always something of interest. unfortunately, to somebody like me who has absolutely no attention span, it often derails the entire show as it has now. This is you have a GoCam, right?
Yes, the brand new version of the GoPro Hero Cam, Hero 2. I took it for its first test run over the weekend in Boston's Public Garden, and because I don't skydive nor do I have a skateboard or a motocross bike, I have to basically set it up in trees and take videos of squirrels.
I love this. Here come the grackles. Wow, this is really cool. So this is not live. Man, look at that.
This is not live. This is live to tape.
Right.
Sort of like
there's no editing involved.
It's recorded live in front of a live audience of squirrels.
In front of live squirrels and grackles. That's so cool. All right, I'm not. Okay, I'm done.
All I was saying is that I certainly understand that, and this crosses across so many industries, especially as big companies have to get used to the fact that it's possible for their employees to make money on their own time with their own skills. And it is surprising to see Zynga do something like that because
it's a shame.
It's a shame because I can't remember the details, but about a year and a half ago, I was speaking to somebody who was involved in that kind of a transaction, and I was asking that question because I actually found myself in that situation a few years ago, and they're saying, no, we believe that we our agreement says that we have a first look at everything that you do, just like kind of like what HP had with Woz, saying if you develop it, you at least have to bring it to us first so we can make the first offer, but if we say no, then you're free to do whatever you want with it. And that was exactly what he was saying to me. He feels as though we want to encourage people to have their own lives, to pursue their own side projects, and we also hope that if they think that they can get we can be good partners with them, that makes our company more valuable and our company more interesting. So that is sort of disappointing to see Zynga make a demand like that.
And I have to admit, I've worked in production for a long time, and those kind of contracts are pretty common. I mean, you know, that you can't do anything outside of that in the field that you're in specifically. And I've actually, as an owner of a company, have been screwed by employees who took
work
away.
Come down on the Zynga side.
So I'm afraid that I don't have our employees sign those contracts, but it is pretty clear in our company that if you cross that, I will take it badly. So it's not a legal thing. It's more of a, I'll never work with you again.
The problem is that employees, creative employees, are steeped in conversations and meetings and technology and ideas and all that stuff. And then that's their sort of knowledge base for going home and creating a competitive product. It's kind of like when you leave a company, you sign a thing saying you're not going to talk about anything you saw in your company for the next 2 years or whatever. And it's a real problem because, a lot of employees can just show up to work, clock in, go through the motions, and all the while they're working on their own startup, which is actually a competitor to your product. So they have to do something like that. It's a tough problem. I mean, Google got into the situation where they had so many 20% time products that they had to start slashing and burning everything because it's just too many. You can't launch every product that every employee creates.
Well, you don't have to. Google, I presume, owns 20% time projects. So, I mean, sure, I'm sure they'd own those. But you really gave the perfect counterexample, Andy, yourself. We would have, there'd be no Apple computer if it weren't for Woz being able to do, in fact, use HP parts to build it. As an HP employee, not on HP's time, but as an HP employee.
Yeah. I mean, I also wish that things, it is important that you not hire somebody to compete with you in their off time. But there are certainly ways to write such a contract that simply says we don't own 100% of your output as a developer. We just say that you can't do something that will compete with.
It might be a little different.
I'm just saying. My own example was about some years ago when I was offered a staff position at a newspaper, not the Sun Times, but someplace else. And the sticking point was that I couldn't write for anybody else under any circumstance. It was 100%. And I said, "Oh," and I came when the offer was on the table. I had to come back and say, "Okay, but the number that you gave me, you're gonna have to add to that because you are buying.
Right. You're buying 100%
of my time. I can sell you a license to everything that I could ever write, but I don't think you can afford that.
You have to pay me accordingly. That makes sense. Yeah. And the point is to be made that Woz was probably very low level when he was doing a side project. That's a little different from a developer who's making maybe your primary product and at home is making a competitor to that product. I can kind of understand that.
Also,
it's happened to us. You know, Kevin Rose started Dignation after being on Twit for a couple of months. He said, I could do a better job and started Dignation. It didn't make me happy, but it didn't sunder our friendship. John C. Dvorak, after poo-pooing podcasts for a long time, then doing Twit for a few months, started Cranky Geek. So it's happened to me a number of times. And we encourage, I think, I don't think there's a single host here who doesn't have a a show of their own, including Andy, who has his show. But Andy, to his credit, it wasn't required, but did offer me the show first before bringing Andy Anacco's Journal to Dan at 5x5.
And then some people create shows and then bring them back into Twit.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm in a different position, perhaps, because you have some, Alex, you have some proprietary technology people are learning. You know, I mean, I just feel like I don't want to keep that title lit on people. I want to encourage the creativity. And if we lose a little bit, we lose a little bit. I mean, Colleen became a streaming video engineer and then went to Google what she learned here. She was a sociology major. She was our engineer here, became an adept at streaming media, and has a great job at Google. and it comes back. What goes around comes around. I mean, she's paying it forward, so I don't have a problem with that. Right. But I also understand when you are giving people proprietary technology that is unique to your company, and they're going out in the evenings and saying, yeah, I could build something even better than that. Well, and that's not good either.
And it's really hard when one of the things to remember is that when you're in one of these companies, it's also, you know, a lot of what you know is based on, I mean, my master's degree, I mean, I was an Eastern philosophy major. My master's degree in filmmaking was working at Lucasfilm and ILM. It's very hard for me to separate the fact that that's where I learned everything about filmmaking, you know, right. And when you're in that.
Yeah, there, I mean, that's how it works, level of, isn't it?
But I mean, the thing is when you're in that cauldron of all these incredibly smart people, it is hard to separate where does that really belong to you when you start doing stuff on your own,
right.
When you're still at the company. You know, that's the hard thing. I do think it is important. I mean, I think that, for instance, working at ILM and Lucasfilm, there were lines that you couldn't cross, but there were definitely a lot of places where we could go and do our own thing.
Creative
and
people need to have some outlet.
Photoshop.
You know? Right.
Is something that was done
really
on the side.
Isn't that interesting?
So I mean, that's the kind of, you know.
So the Knoll brothers were at Lucas when they created Photoshop?
John was.
Wow.
Twitter was a side project.
Yeah, but with Ev's encouragement and support.
Yeah.
And they kept Twitter, didn't they? Although I suppose it could have gone on to be something else. Webby made a good point in our chat room. He said, if one feels stifled by one's boss, one shouldn't have a boss. Go start your own company. And I think that's the other thing that happens a lot of times. People do. They get – that's what you did.
Right.
You got inspired by working at Lucas, and you said, I lied, and then you did your own thing. And that's how the world gets better.
Right.
So there's a kind of – I think there's two different ways of looking at it, but I don't know if there's a right answer. Anyway, that's how they do it at Zynga. And are you worried that they're going to – I actually deleted OMG Pop's draw something from my iPad. I felt it was too much of a distraction. I had to stop.
Yeah.
When I got
the word The Rapture and just was inspired to do a 7-panel comic.
Yeah, exactly.
About it.
That's the backdrop, by the way.
I was actually a little bit upset when the person guessed it on panel number 3. They didn't see like the whole Wrath of God thing going on.
I did the same thing.
That's where I realized that perhaps I should, you know.
Yeah.
Decline.
Maybe stop playing the game.
But that was such a smart move on these developers, because can you really see draw something becoming this still a big hit 3 months from now? I really think they sold this thing at the top of its game.
I agree. I disagreed with a couple. Was it Business Insider? It said they left $800 million on the table. No, they didn't.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
No, they didn't.
Well played.
Well played, sir. So top story. Coming up in just a second. That was, believe it or not, all preliminary.
That was just us warming up.
That was the pre-show.
Like we were just
testing the microphones.
Just like stretching out a little bit.
I love Jean-Louis Gasset's Monday note. I read it every Monday. He's the former Apple president. He was the president of Apple France and then came to Apple under Scully. And he was the guy who left Apple to create BOS, was in the running for the next version of the Apple operating system. Steve Jobs got the job. Gasset, to his credit, said that Apple made the right choice. But he says that what Apple's doing is the effective equivalent of bloodletting. and that's how it's going to handle its problem of too much cash. It's going to let a little bloodletting go on.
I think it's a good comparison of the Wall Street investors to leeches.
We'll talk about that in just a second. First, let's talk a little bit about trust and GoToMeeting. You know, when you work with somebody, we were just talking in a way about trust. When you work with somebody, a client or a colleague, a prospective client, a lot of what collaboration is a matter of building trust between you and your partners, you and your colleagues at work, you and your clients. They have to trust you. You have to trust them. And one of the things that really hurts this is the fact that we don't anymore work in the same space a lot. You know, their companies are distributed all over the place. Clients may be in another country. And so how do you build that trust without face-to-face meetings? And that's where GoToMeeting is really fantastic. Now, I don't mean just the screen sharing, because GoToMeeting has now added HD faces. And by the way, for when they first added it, you had to be using the desktop Mac or PC to do it. Now you can use the camera on the iPad and have HD faces and be in a meeting, and they can see you from the iPad. I'm telling you, huge. This is incredible, and it is beautiful quality. Really takes advantage of the iPad's camera, the high-res screen. You do screen share, but you also can talk to each other, you hear each other, and you see each other's body language and faces. For training, for sales presentations, for weekly status meetings, this is the way to do it. GoToMeeting. You've got to try it. The iPad app is free, by the way. They could charge for this, I think, but they don't. So here's the deal. Go to GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. It's right here. It's the orange button right here. And use our offer code MacBreak so we get credit. That would be a nice thing to do. You don't have to, but it'd be nice if you did. And then, because we'll get credit anyway. You know, they know. They know who's responsible. And then download it on your iPad and try it on your iPad. Works with Windows. Works with Mac OS. I can tell you all the additional features. You know, secure 128-bit SSL. There's never been an exploit. There was, you know, you keep hearing exploits with these other solutions. The way GoToMeeting works, it's really secure. It also does not require you to open holes in your firewall for the ports, so that, which is also a security risk. It uses NAT traversal, so it just kind of works. I could go on and on. I want you to try it. Free for 30 days. GoToMeeting.com. Have a meeting. You know, you could actually play draw something with GoToMeeting kind of by hand, and you'd see the person, and you'd draw a picture on the screen, and you could watch them guessing. You could actually do that. It would be even more better. Right?
More better.
Or you could even, you know what you could do? You could play draw something. You go iPad to iPad. You could play draw something and watch the person's reaction as you drew it. That'd be so cool. Anyway, give it a try. You could think of lots of ways to use this. GoToMeeting.com, offer code MacBreak. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. I like Jean-Louis Gasset. He has a turn, good with a turn of the phrase. The treatment for the blood disease called polycythemia vera, too many red cells, goes back to the Dark Ages. Okay, now if you're eating breakfast, you might want to just cover your ears. Lance a vein and relieve the patient of a pint of blood. Phlebotomy treats the symptom, but not the condition. There's no known cure. The bloodletting must be repeated indefinitely. This is what comes to mind when I see how Apple intends to treat its polycythemia vera. Too many greenbacks. Apple's going to bleed off $45 billion in excess cash through a combination of dividend payments and stock repurchase. But why get rid of the excess cash, he says? How dangerous is it, and what exactly is excess? I encourage you, it's a long and elaborate post, but he talks about the debate on Wall Street about what to do. Is it better to keep this cash? Is it better to get rid of this cash? Is Apple going to, they say, well, we'll replace the cash anyway, just in normal operations. It isn't going to even cost us anything. It just keeps us from going over $100 billion.
Wall Street's fear is that Apple's going to go nuts and buy every company in the universe and thereby get distracted and waste money and time and energy and all that stuff.
Right.
And that's a really good thing to be afraid of, because Wall Street insider types are among the only pundit commentators out there who are a little bit more disciplined and realistic about what acquisitions can give you. I just wrote a Cult of Mac post on this on Saturday, which is essentially saying what he's saying, and that is that, you know, Apple should buy nothing. I rounded up all of these articles that said Apple should buy Twitter, Apple should buy Yahoo, Apple should buy
Canada
Postal Service. Yeah, I mean, it was just nuts. Everybody think, you know, because everybody wants to be Dr. Evil sitting in a lair.
Right.
And like spending hundreds of billions, you know, spending all this money. And I mean, me too. I would love to, you know, I would make ridiculously bad acquisitions if I were, you know, the emperor of Apple. But one of the things that's great about Apple is that they're very disciplined about that. They make small acquisitions when they buy the technology or the people. When you buy a big, like when HP bought Compaq and then HP bought Palm, those were terrible acquisitions, hugely wasteful of money, resources. HP had 900 people working full-time on just the acquisition strategy before they bought Compaq for 6-9 months, something like, I mean, just an insane waste of time and money. And they always say, well, this is going to give us synergies and all these wonderful benefits, and those rarely pan out. So I think
Time Warner AOL is another one that was just horrible.
Yeah. Horrible.
Well, I don't think Apple has shown any interest in doing any kind of major mergers with anyone at any point in time.
And that shows discipline, I think.
And I don't think they need to. Trying to integrate what Apple does to most of these companies would be almost impossible. It'd be, you know, it's like trying to teach a caveman to drive an F1 racer. Right. I mean, it's like, you know, because the thing is that these companies, you know, what they measure and what they think is important and what they build their infrastructure around is so backwards most of the time. There's not really any reason for Apple to do that. And I don't mean that all Apple's approaches are well done, but I mean, it's just a much more refined system. And I don't think there's any reason for them to pick those up. I think that one thing that I think is interesting is if I was Apple and I was going to spend money, I would just start buying back all the stock until it was all gone. You know, I don't know why they even put up with these guys. You know, so I mean, the thing is that
you know, they just take it private.
$45 billion a year, and in 10 years you own the company, and you don't have to. And then there's no more reports. There's a lot less of.
I would think that would be a desirable.
If you want to get rid of cash,
except that you do want stock options, publicly traded stock options, to reward employees. Okay. I think that's the only reason that a company like Apple would want to be public. Why?
There's other ways they can reward them.
And the SEC requirements. Although we have this new jobs bill that apparently is changing that requirement a little bit, but not enough. Probably to get Apple out of the requirement to be public. If you have 500 investors, you have to go public. And I think they've raised that number, or about to raise that number, to 1,000 or more. Look at Apple's stock price, though. The stock market likes it. Record high today of $615.48 is a little bit off that peak.
Just went up.
Yeah, it's going up. It's almost $8 up today.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, now one price. Incredible. One share of Apple stock costs more than a 32-gigabyte. That's the new metric. We now say, how long will it be until we can get a MacBook Air for the price of one share of Apple stock?
Not long, I think, at this rate.
But it does make you wonder. All these, I've been reading financial reports over the past couple of weeks that keep saying, well, if they continue on this tech, it's almost impossible for Apple to bleed off as much money as more money than they're actually taking in.
Right.
And I haven't seen a good answer to the question. Well, what if this is a really good Apple is truly in a right place, right time, right product sort of situation, where right now they have some of the hottest selling products in the market, but they still have the iPad market completely to itself. What happens when a year from now, 2 years from now, other companies finally figure out how to make a $400 tablet that actually works extremely well?
That's why Apple is the new product is everything. So the new product is iCloud supporting Macs, MacBook Pros, MacBook Airs, iPads, phones, everything. And so even if Samsung came out with a superior tablet to the iPad, it wouldn't be part of your sort of ecosystem if you're, you know, like I am, which is, you know, you have Apple TV, you have everything. It still wouldn't be better.
But is iCloud such an intensively good value add? I know you're just making one example. That's not the whole argument. But is Apple ever going to be able to make anything again that is so uniquely the only thing you can get that will be as good as anything else and be coming out with? Once they've come up with the tablet, what's next after that? Is the TV going to be that next thing? I've seen that last week wasn't the first time that I think it was Shigase who was talking about a friend of his suggesting that maybe Apple's going to revolutionize cameras next. And I keep wondering where is the are they approaching the ceiling of innovation where there's a limit to how many revolutions they can accomplish in a 5-year period?
Cars. That's all I'm saying. Cars.
All right. I'm going to tell you what Apple should do. Because it's very simple. It's very obvious. First of all, there is some threat, you know, that they'll lose their hegemony in the iPad market. But Apple's very good at coming up with new products. They don't put very much of their money into R&D. In fact, they kind of put a notoriously small amount compared to other similar companies into R&D. Put a little more into R&D. If I were Apple, I'd want to control my supply chain a little bit better. They are, for instance, very dependent on Samsung for every single display right now on the iPad. LG's ramping up. Apple should start, I think, if from a business point of view, should really start maybe building their own supply chain. Because they don't control it, and that is a real risk. And it's why they couldn't make enough iPads in years past. So that's one. The other thing that I think Apple probably could spend its money on. Let's see. I had two things. Oh, that I would like to see them spend their money on that they won't is moving manufacture back to the U.S.
Yeah.
And that could tie into controlling the supply chain. We've already seen studies that say it costs $60 more for an iPhone if you made it in the U.S. It's not a huge, significant increase. And I think it would be very good public relations for the company to just say, you know what, you're right. We used to make everything in the U.S. American workers are the best workers in the world. We want to make the best products in the world. We want to make quality. We are going to go upstream. Everybody else in the tech industry is making them in China, making them in Thailand, making them in Korea, making them in Brazil. We're going to move it all here to the U.S. That's what I'd spend the money on. It'd be very good for business, I think.
They don't. For one thing, Apple in its character doesn't care what other people think. Meaning that this is not the
company
that will
ever... Of course they do, though, really, Andy.
I think of that as sort of like putting on the box how fast your processor is in benchmark.
But they do put design in California, and they did that for a reason.
By an Englishman. Assembled in China.
Yeah, and that's because they had to. The law requires them to. They'd like to say design and made in California. I promise you that. The reason they put design in California on there is because they do care. Look, it's a company driven by marketing. Marketing means convincing people that you make a great product. Don't you think Apple has a very, very good marketing strategy?
Well, they're also selling as more than they can. They're also selling more than they actually manufacture as it is.
Right.
So they're not faced with a problem right now where they're saying, "Gosh, how do we be more competitive against other companies?" I think that their solution to that is always make sure that you can make them fast. Also, make sure that you do a really, really compelling product. They are actually building more factories in the United States of America, but I don't think that building a majority of Apple products inside the United States would be their priority unless they were absolutely certain that they could do these really, really quick prototype turnarounds, these really, really quick turnarounds of adjustments in the United States and do them as quickly as they can do them where they're doing it right now in Asia.
Which will never happen. I mean, I think one of the things you have to remember is that iPhones and other Apple products are actually made all over the place. The final assembly takes place in Foxconn factories for the most part. But, you know, the parts are made everywhere. And this isn't something that's broken for Apple. People think, well, oh, you know, those poor Chinese workers, we could really help them by firing them.
You're right. You're right. And the chat room's pointing out that the global market is becoming more and more important at Apple. Only about a third of their products are sold in the U.S. So I take it back. But maybe improve conditions for workers around the world. Maybe use the money to do that instead. How about that?
I'd much rather see $45 billion going into improving conditions at Foxconn.
I agree. You don't want to fire them. This is a bad message. Oh, yeah, the conditions are bad, so we're going to fire you all.
They deserve better working conditions a lot more than the folks that are going to get the dividend checks.
I agree.
You know, The thing is that the problem that I have with all of this is that if you are – I totally understand the idea of getting dividends if you are a slow-growing company. If you're growing at 2%, 3%, 5% a year, that's just not what Apple is doing. Apple is growing like a small company that's nimble and it's growing by crazy percentages. The investors are riding – you know, they're riding that along. They don't deserve an extra penny. You know, if they don't like it, go invest somewhere else.
I agree.
You know, and when Apple slows down, and they will, eventually Apple will slow down to 3% or 5% a year, then to continue to engage those investors, it is part of the market for them to start applying dividends. That's how you make that meal sweeter, right? So, but right
so
now,
why
that's
did
not
they
necessary.
Do it then? Pressure?
Steve's not there anymore.
Yeah, because Steve
held
the line.
Internal conversations were a big FU.
Yeah, you know, Steve held the line. He just said, I'm not even going to consider it.
So they're,
you have to understand that the decision-making process is being made by a whole bunch of people who own a whole lot of stock. So this was, to a very large extent, it's like, let's pay ourselves
self-serving.
A lot of money.
They're the biggest stockholders.
Right.
I didn't even think of that. That's like
100, you know, gazillion shares, and what this means for you, you know, quarterly, you get this, you know, huge check.
If you have a million shares of Apple stock, which a great many of Apple executives do, you just gave yourself a $2.65 million raise every year.
Not shabby.
You could buy a decent boat with that.
Yeah. And Apple will have the same amount of money left at the end of the year because they're going to keep on
Isn't
making
that funny?
More money. Yeah. And I mean, because when we look at the growth of these, we're still looking at the penetration of the iPhone is what, 2%, 3% of the total phone market. I don't see anything. I don't know when someone is going to compete with the iPad. It would be great to have a competition with the iPad. I keep on trying new devices. but I think that they're going to continue to grow that market, and I think they're just going to keep on chewing up the computer market, and I think that they can keep on moving into those markets, using them to leverage it. This is what people worry about when they talk about antitrust, is of course they're going to keep on using one market to leverage themselves into the next one.
Well, it's kind of the same market, actually. I think that the next big thing is going to be desktop iPads, essentially, that are as powerful as the iMac or more, and just a gigantic touchscreen on your desk at a drafting table angle. And I think that's it's an absolute certainty that's going to happen, and that's going to be a difficult transition to get people who are hooked on their mice and physical keyboards to virtual keyboards and never again use a mouse. That's going to be a hard transition, but it's going to be a very profitable one. Apple is actually going to, absolutely going to dominate it completely. I mean, Microsoft has had Surface for several years, and they just can't seem to turn it into a consumer product. It's going to be another iPad-like bloodbath when they do that.
I think you've kind of answered the question for me about what should Apple do with the surplus. And for me, it's I hope that they use that money to take a bath on a product that the world isn't quite ready for yet. Because if you get the idea, if you get the idea of a 24-inch Surface computer, I'm not quite sure that people are ready to really grasp that right now as a replacement for a desktop. However, the reason why people would actually turn to these is if they wouldn't buy the first generation, they wouldn't buy the second generation, they'd start looking at the third generation, where fans like us, or fans of new things, not necessarily fans of Apple, have started to understand exactly how this is different. We stop thinking about it as a giant iPad. We stop thinking of it as a virtual keyboard. We start thinking about it as a whole new thing. If they can sell enough, if they can really take a bath on this product year after year after year, and not have to be in the CEO carousel of saying, well, unfortunately, the CEO of the company has to answer, well, how come you guys put X billions of dollars in this product, and we've sold exactly 500 million tablets, or $500 million dollars worth of product. You have to go because you have to start killing these unprofitable products. Apple's probably one of the few companies right now that can simply say, no, we've got that thermometer of we've got this hourglass of money, and as soon as we release this, we turn the hourglass over. When the last dollar rolls through the top of the glass and drops in the bottom, then we'll consider canceling it. But we have a good 3 or 4 years in which we'd make this a successful product.
I think the hard part for Apple is that right now they have a lot of people like us to some degree that will buy almost everything once, because you know that when you buy it, it's going to be great and it's going to work and it's going to, and I think that they, I don't think that they want to experiment too much down the path that would get people to not do that knee jerk, like, I've never touched it, but I'm going to go stand in line and buy it, that type of thing. Oh, by the way, this was pointed out in the chat room and I just checked on it. You know, Tim Cook, just as a note, is not receiving any dividends on his unvested shares.
Oh.
So,
well, because he's unvested.
They're unvested, but I mean,
he's got a few vested shares.
The thing, remember, is that a lot of these folks have stock options, not necessarily, they haven't necessarily converted.
No, of course you don't get dividends on stock options because you haven't bought the stock yet.
But when we talk about shares.
They probably have a few shares.
Oh, they have a few shares, but it's not when you think about them getting all of these stock, a lot of them are stock options, not the actual stock, so they're not actually paying that. I'd like to see Apple actually spend money on making the iCloud more useful, for instance. I think that a lot of these cities could really use a better, kind of Wi-Fi, grid type of thing that would allow our iPhones, for instance, to call, or to use, be ubiquitously connected without 3G.
You know what comes to me, really, is that it is not easy to be in Apple's position, despite the fact that they are on top of the world. It is not obvious what you do next.
Right.
And you could easily do something wrong, stumble. And, this is what Andy Grove, who was the CEO of Intel for many years, he wrote a book called Only the Paranoid Survive. He said that in order to succeed, even when Intel is on top, you have to constantly be facing failure, facing your doom.
And the yardstick is out of control. If Apple had year over year growth of, say, 25%, it would be a colossal disaster.
Exactly.
What a loser of a company that would be. What has happened to Apple? They're not the Apple of
the higher you climb, the farther you will fall.
eventually the oxygen starts getting pretty thin in the stratosphere.
So I think Apple's at that position. I mean, their stock price is incredible. Mm-hmm. They have a huge cash in the bank, and it's not clear. And Steve's gone. It's a perfect storm. I mean, if they continue to run it as flawlessly as they have for the last 10 years, I will be very impressed.
Right.
That will be that will redound to Tim Cook and say, and Steve, who picked the right guy That will be an amazing success. We're going to take a break. I want to show you Apple. We're going to debate in a bit the size of the next iPhone. Some say it should be the same, 3.5 inches. Some say 4.6 is in the works. Some say 4 inches. But let me show you why you want a big screen. This is Peter the Elephant with the 5.3-inch Samsung Galaxy Note. If you ever own an elephant, you're going to want
a Samsung.
A Samsung Galaxy. This video, he takes a... at one point, I decided that is a prosthetic trunk. There is a human on the other side of... Look at this. He's actually swiping. No, he's not. He's playing the... That's a prosthetic trunk. Come on.
There's raw video to...
I know. It's real. It just... It feels like he's got a finger.
I think he's like one of those trained movie elephants.
He must be a movie elephant.
You rarely see this
behavior. Watch, he's drawing!
On notes in the wild.
He's freaking drawing with the S Pen!
That's a good portrait.
He can play draw something. And this is funny. He takes a picture. Anyway, this is why you want a big screen in case you have any elephants in your family. That is, I don't know if this is, did Samsung make this or did?
Apparently, well.
It must be a Samsung.
Yeah,
app, right?
They're disguising it. Some people theorize it.
No, that's definitely an ad from Samsung. We're going to take a break and debate. How big should the next iPhone be? Is there even going to be a next iPhone?
But evidently, Apple is going down the toilet. That's what we've decided.
If I were an investor, which I'm not, and I don't allow myself to buy any tech stock, partly because I'm an idiot and I would lose my shirt. If I were an investor, I might start shorting Apple only because at some point the roller coaster has to go back down, right?
I'd probably ride it for a little while longer.
I would short them, but I'm not because I don't and I can't. It's vertiginous. These are vertiginous heights.
That's a big word.
I do that to Borak usually, and I forgot that he's not here to complain. Yeah. Let's talk about Hover.com. Hover is, of course, domain registration made simple. Management that's simple. And they've added two new features that I really love, premium domains and clunker trade-ins. So go to Hover.com. Actually, if you go to our special Hover.com address, that's probably the best thing to do, which is MacBreak.hover.com. Does it look different if you go there? I think there's pictures of us and stuff. Look at that. In the old cottage with Scott Bourne. Look at that. And Merlin Mann. Whatever happened to him? Anyway, if you are a MacBreak Weekly listener, you have some advantages. But let me just talk a little bit about just the general advantage of Hover. So you probably, when I started registering domains, I used, I think, VeriSign. I've gone through a lot of them, Dotster, GoDaddy. I'm moving everything over to Hover. There's a few locked that I haven't been able to move. I've got to get in there and move them. I should have used the Hover Concierge service, by the way. See in the upper right-hand corner that phone number? 866-731-6556, 866-731-6556. If you go to MacBreak.Hover.com, you'll see it. If you call them and say, hey, I heard on MacBreak, could you just move all my domains over? They'll do it for free. Normally it's $25. They'll do it. I don't know why I didn't do this. It's their concierge service. They'll move it over. You do pay for a transfer, $10, but you get an additional year. So it's definitely a deal. So they'll add a year registration. You don't have all the upsell gobbledygook. You automatically get, for instance, one of these other guys, you'll have to click 20 or 30 times to buy a domain, including choose whether you want domain privacy. With Hover, it's built in. Automatic. They don't put your address, your phone, or anything like that. Free. Part of the deal. And now this premium domain and clunker trade-ins is pretty cool. Let's say I want fancypants.com. Because I've got an idea for a business. Fancy Pants. Everybody loves Fancy Pants. What will happen is, obviously, somebody has Fancy Pants. Somebody has Ms. Fancy Pants. Now, that you may like. See that star? That means it's a premium domain. So the owner of that domain, it is owned, has set a price, $350. So if you decided Ms. Fancy Pants is the way to go, you could get that, and it's a set price. So that's kind of nice, because as soon as I call... Hey, this is Leo Laporte from Twit. I would like Fancy Pants. That's the price, $14,200. You know, it goes up as soon as they hear. So anonymous is a great thing. Fancy Pen. So all of these starred domains are domains that the owner is willing to sell. And here's the other neat thing. Those are the new premium domains.
And it's nice because you don't have to sit there and negotiate. You don't have to, you know.
It saves you time.
Yeah.
And they set the price. And if, by the way, if you have a domain you want to sell, you can do this on your site too. Now, if you have domains you registered or renewed at Hover and you want to upgrade to a fancy domain, they'll take the old domain name back and credit you with everything you've spent with Hover, including the original registration and any renewal fees. Anything you spent, obviously, if you spent it with somebody else, they're not going to rebate it. But if you spent it with Hover, they'll. So this is why you want to register stuff at Hover. Because it's kind of like domain name insurance for the clunker domains. There's lots more great things. The domain management is fantastic. If you need a standard non-premium domain, use the offer code MACBREAK and you'll save 10%. If you want to trade in a clunker, call customer service or email help at hover.com. I think Hover is just the way to go. And I get tweets and emails from people all the time who say, yeah, I use those other guys, and I am so happy I moved to Hover. It's just
I moved everything to Hover.
The customer service is really what makes it.
And just the ease of use. I mean, it's just like boom, boom, boom.
I don't want all the –
you don't
have
to ride
the clean interface.
No gauntlet.
But also, if you ever need customer service, these guys, they're Canadian, so they're extra nice. That's really the truth of it. Right? Where are you guys from?
Montreal.
Canadians, they're all nice. If you bump into a Canadian on the street, they apologize. It's weird. They go, oh, I'm so sorry you bumped into me.
There's some kind of
wait
video
a minute.
Of us.
Is that Andre
around.
Nantel? Oh, he brought some maple butter. Andre. Oh. I didn't recognize you. Thank you for coming. I appreciate it. This is our source for maple butter. Don't take that.
I want some this time.
This is a new kind.
Ooh.
This is beautiful. Oh, look, more maple butter for
I
all.
Have some.
Oh, Mike, I've got to start coming into the studio for this.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I'm sorry you missed out.
What a gyp.
So good.
Andre is a regular in our chat room.
Yes.
He also does a podcast called, actually a photo blog called Digital Apoptosis. What does that mean, apoptosis? What did he say?
Programmed cell death.
A program to sell death. That's
programmed cell death, as in cell like a cell organism.
That's how you're... See, if you don't have that, you get cancer. So it's a good thing, right? You want your cells to die. Not right away.
Otherwise, you'd have too many.
After a while. He's apparently a biologist, right, as well. Hey, thank you. Les produits d'antan. Beurre d'érable. Maple butter. Wow.
It is so good.
If you've not tried this, oh my God. This is different than the kind you gave us last time. This is like maple butter mayonnaise.
Yeah, it's a little.
It's,
I couldn't find the same kind last time.
No, I liked the last time, but.
Oops.
What would you use this on?
Toast, bagels.
Crumpets.
Peanut butter sandwich.
I can't believe it's not maple mayonnaise.
It looks like maple mayonnaise. Wow. What will they think of next? And you do, don't you do a podcast too, Andre?
Yeah, I can do Futures and Biotech.
I've heard you on Futures and Biotech with Mark Pelletier. Mark is in the chat room as well, another Canadian.
Canadian food show.
We should do that. The coffee, chocolate, cigars, wine, beer, tea, and Canadian food products show.
Please let me be on that show.
Yeah. I so want to be on that show.
That would mean we could eat poutine.
Oh, I don't want to eat poutine.
I do.
There's a couple of things I could pass on. Poutine and smoked meats.
Really?
I know Montreal's famous.
I'll take your smoked meats.
All right.
Haggis.
I love haggis.
All right. We're going to move on. Thank you, Andre.
How do we get to talking about haggis on MacBreak? Well, it is MacBreak.
That's how.
Delicious with maple butter.
It's a rat hole. Right. Yeah. 1243 full. I have the music here somewhere.
Squirrel hole.
iPhone size.
Let's just look at a few tweets from the world. Total Carnage says, Leo Laporte, you're in cloud cuckoo land. Apple bring manufacturing back to the U.S. unilaterally. What's in that coffee?
There you have it.
Nick Glore said, just called Hover to ask a support question about transferring domains. They were so helpful, I'm not even a customer yet. Canadian, I'm telling you. And I'm sure that we're going to start getting tweets about maple butter in just a bit. Moving along, iPhone size. Actually, you could tweet us at Leo Laporte, and I will. I should start paying attention to Twitter. I mean, really.
Turns out, I bet you they might have a business model there.
Somewhere. I don't think so, no. By the way, Ala Jassim says, Leo Laporte is right. You cannot be a good artist on Draw Something. You can't, because you're drawing with your fat finger. If you had a Galaxy Note, you could be. No. We had, by the way, we had Kyle Weens of iFixit on, and we made a special out of that. They're the folks who tear down the new Apple products. In fact, they fly to New Zealand. He says, we draw lots to see who gets to go to New Zealand to be the first to buy, so that when the iPad 3 came out, they were there. When the iPhone came out, and then they take it to a friendly shop and they tear it down. And it's fun because they do it as a live blog at iFixit.com, so you can actually watch to see what's in it piece by piece as they tear it down. And they're really great. So that's a special. If you go to twit.tv/specials, you can watch us talk to Kyle.
It's the episode 113.
And if you watch it, there is a offer code in there. I don't know what it ended up being.
I think it was TWIT. The offer code was TWIT.
I wasn't going to say what the offer code was.
Sorry.
I was going to make them watch that.
Sorry.
You see. But what I didn't know is what you get when you use the offer code TWIT. Do you get like a percentage off, or I don't know what you get.
Well,
okay. Anyway.
I won't say anything.
Watch it and find out. No, you don't have to watch it now. Just use the offer code TWIT at iFixit. And I think it's still going on. AOWC Farcourt says, how can you not like poutine? You know what poutine is. It's cheese, curds, and gravy.
It's
on French
fat.
Fries.
It is so good.
Is it good? I haven't tried it.
The first time I actually had it was in Paris. We were watching a Steeler game at a Canadian bar, eating poutine and drinking caipirinhas and watching a Steeler game. Did I tell you that part? The Steeler game. We were watching a Steeler game. It was
eating poutine and watching the Steelers. That's an interesting
thing. In Paris, right across. Notre Dame was like right
they
across.
They have poutine in Paris?
In this Canadian bar that they do. Oh, and they have the Steelers.
Exotic foreign food.
Yes.
And apparently, according to Anna Van Pelt, you can get genuine Montreal smoked meat from a restaurant in Omaha, Nebraska called Brew Burgers. He's getting some delivered this week. So there you go.
Yum.
I don't know what Biscoff spread is. And I got two tweets that just say, maple butter. So moving along, how big should the iPhone be? There's a rumor I don't give any credence to that it's going to be 4.6 inches.
Oh, yeah.
You don't buy it either?
Well, it's silly. I mean, it's what advantage would Apple have to having a big iPhone outside of worrying that so many Android phones are at least 4 inches diagonal these days?
Well, and that's a legitimate worry. Do you think customers will start to look at the iPhone at 3.5 inches and say that's kind of small?
I think Apple really will be focused on, can this screen be read at that size, as opposed to how big is it physically. I could possibly believe a 4-inch screen, because that's still the big limiting factor is you hold an iPhone in your hand and can you still operate the entire screen just by moving your thumb around. And when you get to a 4-inch screen, you could still sort of stretch and reach it. Every time I've tested a screen that's larger than 4 inches, it really turns it into a two-hand phone. You lose the ability to be hopefully you're carrying something in this hand, take something out of your pocket, get the answer that you took out your phone to get, and then put it back in your shirt pocket. That's what you lose when you go larger than 4 inches. And the other problem is, of course, that they certainly don't want to fragment iPhone any further by having an oddball screen size that programmers are going to have to develop for and target specifically.
What if you made it bigger but had the same resolution?
Yeah, as I'm saying, I actually looked in, used the handy dandy online DPI calculator, and if they kept at a 960 by 640 display at a 4-inch diagonal screen, that would result in a 288.44 pixels per inches. So I think they would do it if they could still say this is a retina grade display. If there's actually trigonometry involved to figure out whether or not that qualifies as retina grade. Retina, they define retina as below the resolution of the human eye with 20/20 vision to actually detect pixels.
But
so I don't think they'll ever build an iPhone that's any larger, that's so large they could not still call it a retina display is the basic point.
Yeah, even at 4.6 inches, at the same resolution as 250 pixels per inch, which is about the same as the new iPad.
Yeah.
The current iPad is 263.
Yeah. You still get to that crazy sort of, but I realize that with an iPad, I think the viewing distance is given as 16 inches.
Right.
That's about yay.
Yeah, you don't hold a phone that far off. Yeah,
exactly.
I think we're on the cusp of a world where pretty much all smartphones and all tablets are quote unquote retina, qualifying
yes.
screens.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's just not going to be an issue. And there may be other ways that they can improve the quality of screens and graphics and all that stuff. But it's about to become an issue like megapixels. At some point, it's just too many and nobody cares. And it's just results in big files and other problems.
Yeah.
But in terms of the size, Andy's right. I think, Apple's going to have a one size fits all phone. And yes, when an Android handset maker comes out with a gigantic phone, there's going to be a minority of people who like gigantic phones and don't mind this massive thing in their pants pocket or in the.
I already have it. It's called the Galaxy Note, and I have right. elephantine fingers.
And if you're an average user, then they're really onto something. But I think it's the outliers that like the giant phones.
Really?
And for a one size fits all. Yeah, absolutely. Business people put them in their shirt pocket or in their suit pocket or in their front. People put it in their front pocket. Some people put it in the back. I mean, you really can't have too big of a phone and still hope to gain hundreds of millions of users.
I put it in my front pocket all the time. It fits fine.
Well, I mean, again, you're a lot.
I don't have
more,
extra big front pockets.
Well, but you're a lot more technology centric than the vast majority of phone users. Their clothes. Like women will have it in a small handbag or whatever. I mean, it's really a problem with each size.
I don't know about the size about putting it in pockets, but I can tell you this looks silly.
No, it doesn't. No. No sillier than taking a picture with an iPad does. We're going to get used to all that stuff.
What I'm voting for is a small iPad, not a big iPhone.
Well, Arnold Kim, writing at Mac Rumors, says that the 4.6-inch display rumor comes from a previously unknown Korean media source with no track record.
Yeah.
So forget it. However, he says iLounge, which got the iPad thickness right, which has had other, says from the same source, the next generation iPhone will, this is a quote from iLounge, will not look like the teardrop-shaped version that was widely rumored for release in 2011. We've been told the device will have a 4-inch display and will be 8 millimeters longer than before with a metal casing, probably aluminum. It's on track to be introduced in the summer of 2012. This, I find none of this believable. And it's still in the engineering phase, not early production. We suspect that poor battery life doomed the prior prototype version, and this one is being built with LTE-ready battery drain in mind. 4 inches would be about right, I think. Resolution.
That's the other component of this that I find interesting, that we might be focusing on the wrong element of why Apple would make a big phone. If you have a big phone that allows you to put in a bigger battery, if you have a bigger battery, then the problems of putting in an LTE radio aren't quite as important as they are if you keep the 3.5-inch form factor. So I don't think that is the argument, but I think that's an interesting argument.
Yeah, you got more room. Bigger battery. And that's why the iPad survives.
I do find that I on my Galaxy 2S or S2, I find that typing on it is much harder than the iPhone. It's the same thing that Andy was talking about. The screen has just gotten to some point where I type a lot slower on it.
Really?
And I type slower on my iPad, too. I don't like doing
it
on my iPad.
I'll
check it out.
You could type like crazy.
I do think the Note is a really, really nice device. And also, it also points out how different the Android market for phones is than the iPhone market. Samsung can build a phone like this because that's not the only phone they're making. They're making every single kind of phone that any user could ever possibly want. Whereas if Apple's going to say, we're going to make a 5-inch iPhone and this is going to be there's only going to be one of two choices that you will have for this entire operating system, that's when they're going to start to feel some pain. They're going to start to feel some blowback from consumers.
Well, the advantage of only making one is that you get all the accessories. I mean, it's really hard to find the breadth of accessories for your Android device.
You're right. There isn't hardly any choice at all.
But then again, how many cases do you need? How many kickstands do you need? I don't think that's quite as big a deal on mobile devices as it is on notebooks and desktops.
Does anybody think that Apple's going to come out with an ice cream sandwich-like version of iOS that kind of sizes itself automatically to the right screen size? Or are they going to stick with it's got to be a multiple of the existing resolution?
Well, it's funny because on the iPad, when they first came out, remember you had that weird, you still do, that weird iPhone thing
1X,
where you get 1X, 2X. And yet on the new iPad, Old apps run just fine. There's no 1X, 2X.
There
is
it just sizes it. When you go from iPhone, there is.
From iPhone, it stays that way. But if you use old, unupdated iPhone apps on the new Retina display.
It just fills it up.
It just fills it up. It's no big deal. And it works great. And it looks great. And to be honest, I often can't tell the difference between an unadapted program and one that's designed for the Retina. So I think that's completely doable. I think Apple's doing it.
Yeah, and it's still a multiple. I'm just wondering if they're going
to... They're going to stay with the multiples. They have to.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think you can, as Andy pointed out, a bigger 4-inch or even a 4.6-inch screen with at the same resolution, no problem. It's resolutionary, and I think you just... I don't think you change the resolution. You can't.
Well, I think that it also makes a big difference. When you start doing something other than 2X from a scaling thing, everything looks soft.
Oogly-oogly.
You know, it's
But why did they do that with the iPhone? Because it is 2X. I guess because the keyboard's different and the controls are different.
Yeah.
That's why. So the iPhone.
I hate those 2X the iPhone apps on an iPad. I just can't stand using them. Especially they don't swivel to landscape mode or. I think
the only one that I use is G Plus because it's.
There are a few, Path looks pretty good. Path looks pretty good on the iPad. Mm-hmm. It looks, big, kind of big.
Yeah.
But it looks pretty good. All right. So what do we think? What are we, do we have a consensus? Next iPhone. Mike Elgin, what do you think?
It's in terms of the screen size, I think it's going to be very, very close to what it is now, identical or the same. I don't think they're going to do a gigantic phone.
And you think fall, you believe this summer? And it can't be summer.
Yeah, the summer. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, remember everybody was expecting the iPhone 5, and it was, and then we got something lesser. So the big jump is coming. The big revolutionary transformation is coming. I think it's probably going to come this year. I mean, it's really painful for Apple now. We were talking earlier about the higher expectations. It's really painful for them to go an entire year without a new iPhone. I mean, they really...
Well, they'll certainly have one in 2012, right?
Absolutely. And it's going to be summer.
It's just a question of June or September, right?
Yeah. But what I think is going to be interesting is it is going to be the sort of Apple as a kind of mobile wallet platform. I think they're going to make a big play for that. So that's going to be, I think, one of the game changers. Apple's going to become your credit card.
Boy, nobody's better positioned than Apple to do that. Google tried to do it with Google Wallet and NFC, near field communications. And
Apple already has your real credit card.
Right. Well, they already know.
Have you bought anything?
Actually, Google does too. But Google's been, as you know, Mike, because you're a Google Plus guy, you're strongly encouraged when you sign up for Google Plus now to give it a credit card.
Yeah.
So Google's making that very concerted effort to have what Amazon and Apple already have, which is your financial credentials.
And today they had Google I.O., and it's like they sold out of Google I.O. tickets in 28 minutes. And they required, Google Wallet. And it was like, I think that's a sign of things to come. I think they're just going to coerce everybody who does anything monetary with Google to use iWallet.
We'll talk about this tomorrow on This Week in Google, but I think this is a turning point. Google is now evil. Period. It happened. I mean, no more evil than anybody else, but Google clearly now is using their power to coerce people. Look what they've done with the black bar at the top of Google Plus now. It's pushing Google Play. Like, if you don't have an Android phone, Google Play is worthless. So Google is now using their market clout. See this? Play. Google's now using their market clout to push other products to front and center Google Plus, even though it's not the best search result in their search results. They've really turned the corner.
This is different from the integration of Google Plus, because Google Plus, there's an argument to be made for improving search results.
They made that argument, I understand, but nevertheless,
this has just come by our stuff. This doesn't improve.
It's gotten
search.
Worse and worse and worse.
Yeah,
and you can argue over, and I will argue that I think upgrading Google Plus results in search is definitely evil. This is what evil meant when they came up, when Paul Buchheit came up with don't be evil as the Google slogan. What they were talking about is paid search results. I mean, that's what it was in those days. And that's what they're doing, in effect. They're putting YouTube and Google Plus higher in the results because we own it, not because it's a better result.
More interestingly, I think if you look at the really big long-term picture, we're entering into a world where it's going to be like the Cold War. It's going to be an Apple world and a Google world.
And an Amazon world. I think Amazon's in there too.
I think Amazon is in big trouble.
Really?
Over the next couple. Yeah, because they've been being very cavalier about getting right directly into the businesses of Apple and Google. Right. And so they've inserted themselves into this dance between two elephants. And I think at some point they're just going to be, especially if you look at the tablet, I think the Kindle Fire is going to be in real trouble. I mean, look at how wonderful it is to read
right. On
the new iPad. It's just like, why would, you know, you don't, that was the original great thing about the original Kindle. It was like, wow, I can go out in the sun and read this thing and it's very pleasant on the eyes. I think the era where ordinary, you know, run-of-the-mill phone and tablet screens are difficult to read on is over. And so I think Amazon's in a lot of trouble. But the point is that both Apple and Google are going to want to do everything from your television set to your tablet to your e-commerce to your personal contextual advertising. And it's going to be very difficult for almost anybody else to really compete in a meaningful way.
Well, have you gone to the Apple Store and bought something from the Apple Store with your own iPhone? Have you seen this yet? You walk into the Apple Store and you mean
physical store?
You walk into the Apple Store.
Yeah.
And you open up your Apple app. And you take a picture of the thing and you pay for it with your iTunes, you know, whatever, and then you walk out of the store.
Self-service.
You don't even talk to anybody?
No, you don't.
I love that.
No,
I don't want to talk to anybody.
No, it's totally.
I take a picture of this maple butter. It charges me, and then I pick it up, and I go out the door.
And right now, I don't know how that really works. I mean, like, I don't understand.
Well, wait a minute, because they don't have open stock on the floor.
Yeah, they have like you get like your
they have a stack of iPads.
No, you have like your Thunderbolt. So you take out your Thunderbolt cable. You take a picture of that's what I bought.
$50 Thunderbolt cable.
No, I don't think they're putting out the computers yet. But I mean, okay. All I'm saying is I buy a lot of accessories at Apple stores because I forgot something and I'm on the road and I need to. So I buy power supplies.
So when you go in the accessories, you can just do it.
You just walk, but you take a picture. You don't talk to anybody, and then you just walk out. Now the thing is that's
the
really
honor
cool.
system. Does an alarm go off if you don't take a picture of it?
I don't know. I don't know.
How do they know?
Works. I don't know how it works. But
Leo, you need to send an intern in to find out.
Yeah, I'm not doing it.
But what else?
Hey, Eli, come here.
Yeah. Sorry.
But he's under 18. He won't get arrested.
But I think that the interesting thing is that that's really interesting to see Apple doing it. It's really cool in the Apple Store, but obviously that could be seen as beta for something far bigger than just doing this at the Apple Store.
There's a difference between getting everybody in the Apple world to do something and then getting everybody in the world to do something, especially something as fundamental as how you pay for stuff.
But there's enough people in the Apple world.
Yeah.
You don't need everybody.
Are you going to convince – when you look at the numbers of how many people like own iPhones and you realize that Apple is not the number one manufacturer of phones in the world.
They don't need to be.
And then even Google, who has the ability to put this sort of feature on every single device, they too will have a problem of getting people. Remember how every single credit card owner was essentially given this offer. Here, we'll give you this little tag for your keychain that will have an embedded RFC chip. They just simply tap a display terminal at the pharmacy or at the gas station and pay for your stuff automatically. That has not gone exceptionally well. You still have to actually.
A lot of that has to do with the UI, though. I mean, the thing is that one of the reasons that I don't like self-service at Walgreens or at Raley's or whatever is because it stinks. I mean, you know, doing it is a real pain in the neck, and it has to be easier than going to. I go to Raley's. It's like Safeway or whatever. I go there and they have a self-service and I never use it because it takes me longer to go through the self-service than it takes to just go to a person, even if I have to stand in line. That's the problem. But when you look at how much retailers give up, if I'm going to buy something and I see a really long line, a lot of times I'll just walk out and I'll go, oh, I'm just going to get this on Amazon. Yeah.
Whether it's self-service, I don't think it's really the point. The point is that Apple and Google are going to be involved in the retail experience. And
Absolutely.
Already, I think one of the most underreported phenomena that's happening with the iPad is the fact that it's becoming the cash register of choice using Square, and it's actually really huge. If you go into the point of sale industry, they're quaking in their boots because of this, because people, instead of buying a $20,000 point of sale system, they're buying a couple of iPads and a couple of Square devices and they're good to go.
Yeah, Acre Coffee, which is right down the street from us.
So cool.
It is such a great experience.
Oh, I love it.
You walk in and you order
I buy
your
more
coffee.
Coffee because of it.
Yeah, it's just,
it works.
Easy.
Yeah. So if people haven't used it, you have the app on your iPhone or Android phone.
Which they just updated.
I have it turned on so that when it's proximity, it turns on. So I don't even have to push a button on my phone. I just walk in the door I say, give me a coffee. And, oh, yeah, I'm Leo. And that's it. And I walk out the door with a coffee. It's very similar to maple butter purchasing at the Apple store.
The other scary thing about brick and mortar for brick and mortar stores is that a lot of people are going in, and I've done this myself. You go into a store, use the Amazon app or use some other app. You take a picture of something. It recognizes the product. And you just like, find me the lowest price online and deliver it. And you walk out of the brick and mortar store. They've paid for the electricity, the stocking, and all that stuff. And then you're buying it from someone else. It's really going to be... You know, there are going to be so many options for alternatives for just buying something in a store and paying for it at a cash register. And most of those biggest alternatives are going to involve Apple and Google.
Have you noticed that a lot of stores now put their own barcode over top of the barcode that's on the box?
Really?
Yeah, it's very specific to
Why do they do that?
So that you can't do what he's just talking about. You can't order from Amazon. You know what I mean? Because
you can't take a picture of it and say, oh yeah.
If I'm traveling and I wander into somewhere, I almost always order it off of Amazon. And it's not because of the money. It's because I don't want to. I can't put it in my bag. I don't have any room in my bag. And so I'll buy it from like a lot of the local retailers here in Petaluma. I try to buy from if I walk in, I'm going to buy something from them.
Yeah.
But if I'm traveling, I won't do it. And it's so easy. I mean, that's the thing, is that it's such an easy way to buy stuff, and it shows up.
We're going to take a break. Before we do, I do want to mention this is I'm not sure if this has been updated or not, but a couple of days ago there was a security alert that Safari for iOS was vulnerable to something called address bar spoofing. A security researcher at majorsecurity.net said that users can be tricked into supplying personal information to a malicious website because you can put a link. Here's how it would work. You put a link in an email, hidden link, that people click that is to hacker.com. In the email, you could say bankofamerica.com. But normally when you click the link in the browser, you'll see hacker.com and you go, whoo! But what this spoofing can do is it actually could say bankofamerica.com in the address bar, even though it's not bankofamerica.com. Then you put up the Bank of America login, you capture people's credentials. Apple has been notified of this. It's a little unusual for a security company to notify Apple and go public, but I guess this is serious enough. So here, I'll show you how this works. They've made a demo. Well, actually, I can't because I have to be on. You could do it on your iPad, but they have a demo that if you go to majorsecurity.net.
I don't even want to run a demo on my iPad. It all seems like a good idea.
You could go through this process and it would actually show you the wrong URL. So it's definitely an exploit that is demonstrable, demonstrable. So anyway, just a word of warning. I guess the reason they went public is to let you know that you should be extra careful. And you know what? It's a bad idea to click links in emails anyway. If you hand enter the domain name in your browser bar, you're always safe. They haven't figured out how to spoof that yet. Signs in Mountain Lion point to Retina display in MacBooks sooner than later, according to Ars Technica. It's in OS 10.8 Mountain Lion. There's double-sized graphics we're seeing in all sorts of places.
Are we surprised?
Including Apple's messages. While using the app under the second developer preview of Mountain Lion, some icons are erroneously displaying 2x resolution art. See that? See the icon's too big? That sounds like a mistake, obviously. But the fact that double size icon is in there and Mountain Lion comes out. Now, I think you could reasonably say, well, they're going to put it in Mountain Lion because sometime before the next release of 10, they will be offering Retina displays. I want a Retina display on everything.
I think that's the obvious direction.
Well, it doesn't make immediate sense for everything, but a device like the 11-inch Air definitely needs graphics. It's the I was trying to figure out the difference between why you would choose an 11-inch Air if you had both an iPad and another Mac. What role would that fill into mobile? And because it's just not of an optimal experience for any sort of desktop operating system.
Couple more quickies before we get to our tips of the week. We've mentioned on iPad today, but I should mention it also, that apparently the iPad keeps charging for as long as an hour after it reports 100% on the battery. So if you've got the new iPad, keep it charging. But there are some other interesting battery tidbits. AnandTech said that users running a Verizon iPad in hotspot mode can see as much as 25 hours of battery life.
Yeah.
So I guess you'll have to turn off everything else, But if you want to use it as a hotspot, 25 hours. Of course, the hotspotting is not available on AT&T, just on Verizon in the U.S.
Kind of feel like I screwed up there. Getting it on AT&T.
I got the Verizon. Australians are pissed because Apple's selling the iPad as a 4G iPad in Australia, even though it's not. No LTE compatibility in Australia. The Australian FCC is getting involved in this one. The ACCCCCCC.
I don't consider the 4G label a lie. I think that needs some explanation, but
U.S. only.
Well, yeah. Well, the standard is broad enough that I don't think that that's necessarily wrong. Also, the optimum speeds of the 4G on 3G network on AT&T are actually within the margins of what you'd expect from an LTE connection. But not anywhere near the maximum, but it's certainly within the margins of the minimum. So, I don't know. I kind of wish AT&T and Apple had been a little bit more open about why they're doing that. It's not definitely a proud moment in consumer clarity, but I don't think it's necessarily fraud.
Australia is pretty fit, as is England, pretty finicky about advertising claims. They may force them to change that just because, to make it clear. Also, talking about the battery, apparently the new iPad, when charging, really sucks juice up to 2 amps of current. That really pushes the 2.1 amps in the iPad's charger. And it certainly means that the smaller 1 amp iPhone charger or the dock
takes
connector
forever.
On the USB port is not going to charge it fast enough.
It's like a day. Yeah. It takes like a day to charge an iPad from one of the little ones.
It says the 2 amps quickly drops once the iPad begins to charge. But you only get 500 milliamps on a standard USB port, 900 milliamps on a USB 3 port, and only 1 amp on the iPhone adapter. So use the big one. Use the big boy to charge your new iPad.
Or just be very patient.
Or wait.
All night.
It doesn't say charging, right? But it is charging slightly.
You know, that's the new thing, though. I mean, you have to charge your iPhone 4S and your new iPad all night, every night. If you don't charge it the night before you go to bed, you're going to have trouble. At least I've found. I'm charging my iPhone 4S constantly, and it's kind of similar with the new iPad. It takes forever to charge, and then I'm personally not getting quite 10 hours, which is less than advertised. But it's just, I think this is the world we're headed into, where the batteries just get bigger and bigger and bigger and take longer and longer to charge.
I have the craziest bug right now with my iPhone. It won't charge when it's on. So it'll only charge if I turn it off, and then it'll charge. And then I'm getting ready to get a new one or get somebody.
What about when it turns itself on?
When it turns itself on, I'm still screwed. It'll turn itself on, and then it'll stop charging. So if I plug it in and walk away, it'll turn on, stop charging, and then run out, and then go off, and then come back on again, and just keep on doing that.
That's not good.
It is the craziest bug I've ever seen, because it's... At first, I thought it wouldn't charge at all, and then I realized, and I think it has something to do with the Mophie, to be honest with you, the way I was using it. I have a theory. I shouldn't say this on the show, because I'm going to go to the Apple store and go, I don't know what's wrong, but I do know what's wrong. I'm going to tell
you. I use it your way. So you think that's a bad
thing? So leaving it on all the time?
That's what I do.
I think that my iPhone has gotten into some kind of weird cycle where it's not happy. Oh. So I'm going to hopefully get a new one. And
it could just be the batteries.
It could be some iOS thing, because as I said, it charges fine when it's off, just not when it's on. Like once the OS, and it will not sync. So here's the argument for the iCloud.
It's broken.
The one thing is the saving grace of the iCloud is that I was freaked out that I was like, but I have photos on here and I have all this other stuff. And I realized, I backed it all up to the iCloud.
Right.
So all I have to do is take it in. They can do whatever they want with it. And I just, restore it.
Let's see. Other quick stories. Apple has done the right thing and is no longer approving apps that access the iOS's UDID, that unique identifier in the iPhone. That's good. That's a privacy issue. Apple has allowed apps to access that UDID. Actually, they deprecated the UDID August of last year. They discouraged people from using it, and now they are.
Apple always does the right thing when there's no benefit for doing the wrong thing.
Oh, I like that. Boy, let me write that one down. I think that's true of all of us, isn't it? We only do the wrong thing when there's a benefit. If there's no consequence to doing the right thing, why not? Right?
Exactly.
Right. Do the right thing.
Well,
as long as it doesn't...
they've been feeling pressure from right. from legislators
and the FTC. Yes. Right?
Yeah. Also, they given how much the App Store is like the. It's not exactly the wild, wild west, but if there's a way that some app developer can figure out to make a little bit of extra cash from an app they're releasing, they're going to find it. Just there's no reason for them to have access to that information, so they're going to simply say, nope, can't have it. You can't have nice things. You ruined it for everybody.
Speaking of you can't have nice things, the Apple Store is being sued because an 83-year-old walked into the glass. She says, she broke her nose. I shouldn't laugh. But she says, Apple should not have big glass windows because I thought, I didn't know it was glass and I walked right into it.
Because no other building ever has glass doors. I mean, that's the thing. They have a patent on that, actually.
They actually started installing white stickers on the glass. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if Steve Jobs were alive, this would not be happening, but these white stickers are now being installed on the glass. And she still walked into it.
You know, I saw this and I really thought of you.
Because I've walked into
it. No, so this glass door right here. If you go back and look, there's a really big right where my forehead.
Did you walk into it?
I walked out of the show last time, and I walked right into it, a full tilt. I had a headache all day. I just want to. I didn't break my nose.
I'm so sorry. You
know, no, I was thinking, but I saw this. I was like, maybe I should.
Do not lead with your nose.
Exactly.
Well, I'm really glad my belly. And fortunately, I just went and saw.
Fortunately, I was in a rush, so I was leaning forward.
That's
so
why.
I hit a rush.
Do not be in a rush.
So
there's a door there.
But yeah, well, I know not because when I get close to it, I can see my forehead mark. It's still there.
We'll leave that there.
Just don't wash the door
because it's foreheads. I'm sure.
God, you have a diamond forehead.
It's there.
I actually have many, many times, not in my office for some reason, but walked into the glass on Lisa's office because there's a door and then there's what looks like a door, which is a pane of glass. And I bounce off that all the time.
We have an X on ours.
And Lisa just laughs hysterically. She just goes,
yes.
So I guess I won't be suing myself. Please don't sue me.
I'm not going to sue you.
I'm glad you didn't break your nose.
I still wouldn't have sued you, Leo, just so you know.
All right, let's take a break. I feel bad. I didn't know you walked into the glass.
It was my fault.
Is that why you didn't come back for weeks?
I had to go. I was in the hospital. I was in a coma.
Oh, my God. No. It doesn't. I mean, if you look at it, you can't tell there's a glass. It is smoked glass, though. It's not clear. It's like two or three stops down.
I was
down.
Just in a rush. I wasn't paying attention. Yeah. It's all my fault.
Anyway.
There's glass all over this building. You could walk through it.
Exactly.
Look at my office. It's enclosed in glass.
This is a walking liability. This is just a crazy liability, Leo.
I think
you have to redesign the whole thing. I think there's going to be a real retrofit here. I have to put little white things all.
I think it's all over for Twit anyway. I got the new Apple TV and I go to the podcast section. We have no podcasts anywhere in the podcast section because it's all, you know, the way they weight it is new subscriptions and we don't exist anymore. I think it's all over. No wonder they don't invite us to events anymore. I'm just going to pack it up, sell it, try to recoup my losses. Meanwhile.
You're taking office on that chair. I really like that chair.
You want the chair?
That's a chair of inestimable podcasting authority.
It is. I know. It costs a
hell of a lot of
money.
I'd like to bid on your coffee accessories.
No, I'm holding on to those. Even if I'm in a homeless shelter, at least I'll have good coffee.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, what we should have said first thing. Is. What we first just said is, oh, Leo, you're being silly. Don't close down Twit. Twit is a huge success. Instead of saying, can we be the buzzers who say, ooh, I want that. Who wants a giant gear?
I'm just telling you, this is my life. Just would you ask Dan Benjamin if he has any positions down there in Austin?
Yeah. But seriously, I like the chair. It's a really cool chair.
You can have the chair. I'll give you the chair. I'll give you the chair.
Then my work here is done.
Yeah. Maybe if I do an ad, we can recoup some of our costs.
Sounds good.
You should try that. If only you had like some worthy advertiser with a wonderful product.
75,000 people listen to this show every week. It is a very successful show. That means a total of 300,000 every month, which is comparable to the subscription of Macworld magazine. But we don't show up anywhere on iTunes. Like there's in none of the lists.
Not that we're bitter.
Well, it's like I give up. I give up. You win, Apple. Steve, you won. It's okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Held up the laptop and took pictures at the iPad announcement. You win. I give up. If you're interested in creating a website, perhaps you are. I know you do this all the time, and I am doing this. I got access before the folks at Squarespace and Anthony realized that Twit was a dying brand. They gave me access to Squarespace 6, And look at this. This is, I am so excited. I'm moving Leoville to Squarespace. Everything you need to create an amazing website. And they make it so easy. If you go to squarespace.com, they've got this big green button that says try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card. You don't need to give them any personal information, just your email address so they can email you when the 2 weeks are up. You can use every bit of the Squarespace interface, including their 13 new template redesigns, their 85 new style options, their two brand new templates, the 300 Google Web Font Library, which is amazing. By the way, it's a simple thing, but using some of these web fonts makes a site just look spectacular.
It looks a lot more refined.
It's funny because we're so used to the, you know, Arial, Helvetica, whatever it is, Helvetica, the four fonts or five fonts. It makes a big difference. It just gives it a certain je ne sais quoi to use the maple butter phrase.
It looks designed.
Couldn't be easier. Now, of course, if you are a designer, you can also use all of the tools you're used to. Like they have a CSS editor now with coloring and everything. It's just beautiful if you're a CSS expert. But you don't have to know it. That's the point, to use all of these great features. Take a look at some of the example sites and you'll see. Here's a coffee place, Quill's Coffee, that uses Squarespace. This makes me want to drink Quill's Coffee. Just beautiful stuff. So whether you're a store, whether you're a blog, whether you're a photographer, they've got portfolios. Whether you're a school, Squarespace is fantastic. And all you got to do is click that try it free button to get a good sense of what they can do. They even, if you go to workshops.squarespace.com, they even offer free live classes.
Well, and the support is amazing. I mean, you send them requests and it comes right. I mean, it's not just us. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people.
No. They're
same as Hover. You know,
they're very committed. We try to work only with companies like that, to be honest. So I don't want to work with a company that's going to, I don't know, you try to renew the, you know, reset your password and they never respond and eventually give up. I don't want to work with that kind of company. Squarespace is fantastic. They're responsive. And if you want to buy, and they're very affordable. By the way, I should explain because I think it's not always obvious. This is both web hosting and the great content management system together. And it's good to have them together because it's automatically updated. It's always secure. You really want to, and you cannot bring a Squarespace site down. We bring down sites all the time because of the very sophisticated virtual network technology that they use. When you get a lot of traffic to your site, it just ramps up.
And if you're building a site where you hope that someday you're going to be, you know, getting the big bucks, you know, selling your company for $180 million to Zynga, you want to make sure that when you actually get on Twit, like on Sunday, that your site doesn't actually melt.
Somebody came on the radio show. He had such a good idea. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the Rotten Tomatoes for cars. So he was the editor in chief at Edmunds.com, started this up, and they aggregate all the ratings of the different magazines and stuff on a car. So if you want to know, like, it's a great idea. And he talked about it on the website. Site went down immediately.
Yeah.
So he's got this great plug on the radio show, and boom, it just crashed. It happens all the time. Yeah. I have never crashed a Squarespace site. We try all the time on the show. We did it on Twit where we have a huge live audience. Couldn't bring it down. In our blog, I'll go there right now, inside.twit.tv. You can't bring it down. $12 a month, but you can save. That's, you know, there's different plans, but that's the personal plan. You can save on any of these plans 30% for the first 3 months when you use offer code MacBreak3. So that's our deal, MacBreak3 for 30% off for 3 months. Squarespace is fantastic. And, I've got Leoville on Squarespace, but I want to tweak it some more. I'm using Squarespace 6. It's really fun. It's really cool. Time now for our tips. You haven't been here in so long. We have not really done iOS tips. You have an iOS tip you want to pass along or no?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Alex Lindsay, go right at it. Pixelcore.com.
So this one actually, we had a bunch of good suggestions which are going to come up in some future ones. This was from one of our producers. So I have a problem. I have a lot of problems, but one of my problems is my arms are too short. They're getting too short. I'm getting older. And
wait a minute. Wait, too short for your body?
Too short for my eyes.
So you can't hold it far.
Yeah.
Back.
So yeah, yeah, yeah. So one of the suggestions from one of our producers, Shannon Cooper, is that you can go into general and into your accessibility.
Yeah.
And if you turn Zoom on, so Zoom is
under on the iPhone.
On the iPhone. If you turn Zoom on, it doesn't really say what's going to happen, but if you go into your text messages, so here's me talking to
you. You could zoom it in?
So if you take three fingers,
yeah,
tap it. You tap it.
I didn't know
up,
about that.
And then you take three fingers and you
here, let me show people.
Tap it again.
You don't mind if I show this text?
No, that's fine. All right.
So he's turned on in accessibility options on the iPhone. He's turned on Zoom. Three fingers. By the way, your battery's dying.
I know. I can't charge it while it's on.
Oh, look at that.
You see it zooms up?
But I can't read it.
Well, you have to move it over. Anyway, so.
If I have to.
It depends on
triple.
Where you. Okay, well, you have to take some practice. That's all I'm saying. All right, never mind. Forget it. Forget I said anything. It worked for me.
Well, wait a minute. Do it and see. Can you read the edge of that one?
You have to use three fingers.
It depends on where you zoom in. You're zooming in where you're.
But you can't scroll it around, which they should add.
You can. You have to use three fingers to scroll it around.
Oh, you do it with three fingers.
So you go like this. Hold on. And then you.
Oh, yeah.
And look at that. Whoa. Watch this. You got to
move it down.
Oh, now your head. There we go.
Oh, look how big it is. You can get it really big.
And if you, so you can.
Oh, that's great.
And then you pop back. And then you go, anyway. So,
I wonder, does that work on the iPad too? As well?
I don't know. Anyway.
I was holding it wrong. It was my fault.
So anyway.
Very nice.
I thought that was a great one.
Our iOS tip.
That's all I have.
Do you have, did you, Mike, did you say something?
I said, oh, not that you're holding it wrong.
Andy and Ako, you have a lion tip for us?
Yes, this is actually a cool one where, you know how when you install a piece of software, you have to click through this agreement before you allow you to use this software. There's actually a feature like that you can make people click through before they get to use your Mac. So all you have to do is create a document in TextEdit and say, hi, this belongs to the Copernicus school system. You please don't download porn on it. Please don't use it to allow people to send porn. Just basically porn is a red letter word and porn should not be associated with this. You can put pictures, no porn pictures. And this, you just simply save it as with the title policy banner, one word, capital POLICY, capital BANNER. And you stick it inside the system level library / security folder. And from that point onward, anytime this machine is booted up, before you'll get to the desktop, before you'll get to the login page, someone will have to see this document and click say, yes, I agree to these terms before you go through. Now, I have tried to, I only found out about this recently. I've been trying to see if you can get it to attach to just to individual user accounts. Like, it'd be great if you could just attach this to a guest account so that if someone tries to use your guest account on this machine, you can say, oh, by the way, yeah, in case you found this in a bus terminal, here's who I am, here's where you can return it to, here's the dog who's very, very sad because his owners are sad because his computer just got lost, and please click through this before you get to use this even in guest mode. Unfortunately, apparently, the only way I can get it to work is if you actually just have to actually restart the Mac from zero, and it will affect every single account. So it is attached to this computer and not to a specific account. But either way, it's a really interesting way to present some information, whether it's actual terms of use for like a shared computer or just as an extra way of having some information in there in case this machine ever gets lost or stolen.
Excellent. And that's actually how lions sound.
Is that really? Wait.
But it sounded more like Borborygmus than a lion.
Oh, man.
It's Larry the OS Tip Lion. He gives it five claws and an evisceration of a tourist.
Sounds like a worm.
Yeah, that really did not sound like a lion the first time I heard it.
It was
a slightly dyspeptic lion. Lion who just ate Taco Bell for lunch.
Wait, one
Herman
more.
Herman Munster's
more.
Lion.
Maybe, let's see if this one's good. Better?
It's a weird loop.
That's lion breath.
All right, never mind. I'll find it.
That's Full Spectre Studios' version of lion.
That's a wall of lion. All right. Let's start with our picks of the week with Mr. Michael Elgin, elgin.com.
That's right. I have something here called I don't know if you guys are Edgar Allan Poe fans, but there's this new app book thing called iPo Collection. And it is it's basically a children's book for adults.
Ooh.
And you know, all these kids' books with all the interactive
stuff.
Yeah,
I want one. Yeah.
And check out how cool it is. It has amazing illustrations. Amazing soundtrack.
Wow.
Hey, I don't know if you can see that, but it's very cool. Has a lot of interactive elements, just like the kids' books do. For example, if you, I don't know if you can see this thing there. You can just...
Ooh.
Really nasty stuff.
So what's that called? IPO?
It's called IPO Collection.
IPOE. OE Collection.
Collection. It's in the books category of the App Store, and it's just a lot of fun. It has three short stories: The Oval Portrait, The Telltale Heart, and The Mask of the Red Death. These are all very short stories, wonderfully told.
Oh, it's Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes, Edgar Allan Poe.
Got it.
And yeah, and there's something about his work that lends itself to goofing around with an app like this. It's really pleasurable to read. There's eerie music throughout the whole thing. It's really a lot of fun. And it's kind of going to be a year of Edgar Allan Poe because The Raven is coming out this year.
I know, I'm excited.
John Cusack. Yeah. So it's highly recommended. $3.99 in the App Store. And
Is it awesome. Spooky?
It's very spooky. But it's spooky in a kind of cartoony, fun way.
Can you imagine what Edgar Allan Poe would think of this if he could see it? I mean, it would just blow his mind.
Yeah.
And he would probably get it.
Oh, he'd totally dig it. I want them to do H.P. Lovecraft next.
It's great. Really well done,
how much is it?
$3.99.
God, it's gory. I love it. I'm buying that tonight. Awesome. I might make that my Mac Break pick, actually, my iPad pick. Thank you, Mike Elgin. Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
My pick is something that that iOS has needed for a long, long time, a really muscular music player. It's an app called On Cue by Dan Peraldi, a very, very good writer. Used to write for the unofficial Apple weblog. He's been working on this for a few years now. He recently came up with version 5. What I like about it is that it's much better than the built-in, than the standard iTunes player. Because it really does understand the concept of how you tend to listen to music when you've got several gigabytes on a device. So it understands this concept. I don't know if you can see it over my shoulder here. I'll duck out of the way. I've had to terminate the
squirrel has been terminated. Squirrels. Oh, right. Dear.
So it's number one.
This runs on your iPhone or your
iPad? It's on iPhone or iPad.
Okay.
So it's a universal app. So instead of having just like one list of your music, what it gives you is that it gives you a standard music browser. Over here on the side of the screen here is your queue of tunes that you've selected to play. Mm. And as you can actually just take any piece of music and drag it here. You can take any piece of music. As you can see, it follows my finger. You can drag it here into the top, and it immediately starts playing.
Oh, that's nice.
And as you're listening to that, you can say, ooh, I actually want to hear Golden Slumbers after that. Just drag that to the left into your queue. And as things are playing, you can actually be reordering your queue, saying, oh, I want Back in the USSR to be playing next. I don't want to have to wait for that. So it's really, really easy to make these. It's not just like these simple like point and click. That's all you can do. Build one like instant playlist with a standard player. You can really be very, very interactive. Add whole albums, add whole artists, be editing as you go, as your whims go. It also adds smart playlist features. So that if you want to, they call it a smart queue, where it doesn't give you all of the features of an iTunes smart playlist. But you can simply say, I want you to give me, I'm going to create a new smart queue. I'm going to call this Halliburton because it brings the pain in a congressionally legal way. But you can say, please match. you basically say, give me a bunch of Beatles songs. That haven't been played before by On Cue or by the built-in music player. You can save it, and then as you keep adding more music to your iTunes to your on-device library, it will of course keep manipulating it that way. So it's a double-barreled recommendation. It's a really good player for what it is right now, especially if you're like in a party sort of mode where you really want to take sort of an active interest in what's playing at any given moment, but also because. I thought the first version was kind of interesting. He showed it to me before he even released version 1.0. I thought it was kind of interesting. So the next versions were good, better. This version is one that I really, really like, and I can't wait to see what he does with the next version. He keeps adding to it and keeps making it better and better. I'm hoping that the next version with the smart cues feature will give me something back that I lost ever since Apple introduced iCloud, which is a really predictable way of being able to listen to podcasts. So I don't have to keep managing. I don't have to keep wondering, why did you not sync these three new podcasts? Even though my smart playlist says specifically, you should have copied over these three things that were just added today that I haven't listened to yet. Why do you not like me, iCloud? But something like this. I really think that the time is long, long past for them to be a really good music player on the iPod and the iPod, iPhone, and the iPad. I don't think that Apple's built-in players are anything like that. I mean, take a look at this. You can also bring up a whole bunch of more information. So you can bring up the entire album from there. You can bring up there's a whole bunch of like double tap and triple tap. There are a whole bunch of different cues for doing things, but it's much easier to bring up related information about individual tracks on here than it is in other things. It has ties into Last.fm's library, so if you want to find related artists, if you want to find biographies of these performers, you can get all this from the app. It really is something that I think Apple would hope. To sum up, I should say two things. I hope that either Apple buys this product for Dan or steals from it mercilessly, because this is something that we really, really need on iOS right now. A really good music player.
Yeah, I agree. I hope that they're inspired to improve iTunes.
I'm not hoping they put him out of business. I hope they give Dan a lot of money for this or hire him, because that would be the nice way of things happening. But the fact is, I have never been really, really happy with the built-in music player. So I'm really, really keen to get an app like this. It's only $2.99.
And there's another one that's on Space Q that is not the same from Pegasus. That's the one I was showing. This is the one you want. The one from Pegasus has terrible reviews. So this is much nicer than the one I was showing briefly. I had the wrong one there.
O-N-C-U-E.
Right. O-N-C-U-E. No space. The music player, as you said, by Dan Pourhadi. P-O-U-R-H-A-D-I. That's the right one. Very cool. Can't wait to try that. iPad or iPhone. $2.99. As long as we're talking music, I want to mention for a long time on the iPad, if you wanted to use a music service, Ardio was the only one that had an iPad-specific app. You had to use the iPhone app for Spotify. You still do, which drives me crazy. I wish Spotify would do an iPad app. But the good news is Moog, which is, I think, an excellent music service, is now offering an iPad app. Just came out with one that will use the iPad screen fully. Moog has a lot of nice features. I'm a big Moog fan. They have high-quality streaming. This also supports radio stations, Pandora-style radio stations. I use Pandora a lot. Moog, you might prefer. It has artist-specific, artist-only. They have a little slider that you can customize it with. 320 kilobit streaming, which is really nice. And I think that that's the best quality available out there. $10 a month, just like Spotify, just like RDO. They're all kind of the same. Basic stuff, but Moog now has an iPad app. I'm a Moog subscriber, so I'll be very happily using that.
I have to admit, I become completely obsessed with Spotify.
I don't understand why Spotify has not updated to do an iPad app.
I think it's frustrating. I use it all day. So the big thing is being able to sync the different computers and my phone, and I'm constantly making new mixes and sharing them with people. Like, so the thing is, the one thing I hate about Spotify is I don't really want everyone to know that I listen to certain bands.
You could turn that off.
I try to turn it off, and it keeps on wanting to turn me back on.
On Facebook, you mean?
Well, Facebook I can turn off, and then it keeps on showing it on Spotify. Yeah. So I keep on going, private session, private session, private session. But the big thing is if I want to send friends, you know, I make a mix, I can send I send someone else in Spotify, that, and then all of my devices are being synced instantly. I agree. Every time they turn on. Except for the Android. I don't know why it doesn't sync.
We use it on the radio show. We make Spotify playlist of all the music that we... Yeah. But... No iPad app. So RDO has had the only one for a long time. Moog now does. This has got to put some pressure on Spotify. I think you're right. I think Spotify of the three is the best service. But
It doesn't have everything. No Peter Gabriel. Or not very much Peter Gabriel. It's really kind of
It's a little weird sometimes.
It's like, weird. Like, you really? Like, they put on all there. The Who, but not Let My Love Open the Door. Like because I was watching Gross Point Blank, and I was like, I'd really like to have that in a mix.
Yeah, sometimes I get playlists where they're grayed out.
Yeah, you're like,
and
what?
It's like, come on.
Really?
You gotta have that.
Are you kidding
That's
me?
Crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Your pick of the week, sir.
So I'm doing a return pick because we shot some cool stuff.
I have a gimbal.
Did you? Yeah. So they've changed it though.
There's a new gimbal.
Well, They've improved it based on your feedback, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. One of the problems was, you know, taking it off.
It was impossible. In fact, I gave away my gimbal because I borrowed somebody's iPhone to put the gimbal on. You took it off much easier, yeah.
So what happened was, is what they did is they replaced...
A little Teflon in there.
No, instead of having rubber there, they put felt. Turns out that was the whole...
That was it.
So now it works. So this is still, like, one of the best cases, if not the best case.
So notice the shot so you know where you're showing it. Okay, there we go.
So you have this little case here. And
so the negative is that you have to use a special case, but when you have the case,
look
what you can do.
Slide it on, and what's nice about it is that you're able to. So once you get the slit on, you have this nice little slot here,
right?
And this slot, this is a tripod mount, and you just slide it on like that, and you can put it on your tripod, and you can do your little thing here.
Do you use this instead of the Owly?
No, not instead. It's like it just gives you
another thing.
It's another thing. So I can put that on the tripod. I can put this on. It's just nice because this is a nice little tripod.
That's a handheld.
You can do handheld where you can set it. You can set it down and
slide that
on. The big thing is when you're out on the road and you want to slide it in, you just go whoop, and you're done. And there's not a lot of screwing around with it, you know, like that. And then they have a kind of a test case. Gordon Fowler was actually here over the weekend. And
what the hell is that?
So look at this.
Is that somebody else's?
No, this is his. This is just a prototype.
Oh, a metal one.
So, but this has
they don't sell this yet.
Not yet. But anyway, so if you go to my G Plus page, did I send you this?
No.
He shot Twit. Twit panoramas.
Oh.
So go to my G Plus.
When
page.
Was he here?
He was here.
Oh, you sent me an email. You did send me an email about this. Yeah, I wasn't here that day.
So
the
panoramas on my G Plus page are shot with an iPhone. And when you see it, you'll understand why that's so impressive. I mean, I think the original files were 180 megabytes. I mean, it was insane.
The iPhone has a great camera. Especially if you're doing a panorama.
There you go.
It's on 360cities.net.
Yeah, and there's a link there.
If you search for Twit, you will see the Twit Command Center.
And so
this is UBQ, is that how you pronounce that?
UBIC. And this is...
Wow, look at the quality of this.
I think you can zoom in there, but it's like...
Yeah. So he used that mount?
This mount. This is kind of a prototype mount.
Wow. I'm getting queasy.
But it's.
But that's. I get queasy anytime I come in here when I think of how much money.
Yeah, you're just looking at the panorama. It's not the wide FOV. So look at that. Look at that.
What happened?
I don't know.
It went to another image.
Yeah. Now look at and look down. See if you can roll. No, that's going to take you. Look at how much data there is.
There's a ton. We got to do this with the bricks. Okay. We did a gigapan of the bricks, but this is very nice.
We'll do some more.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
Wowie.
Anyway,
so
it's a great
how much is that? And
this is still in process.
I don't sell that handle yet.
But as a device, as far as something to attach quickly when you actually want to use a tripod and so on and so forth, and it feels really great. And the one big problem with it was taking it off your iPhone was like was surgery. Yeah. And they've fixed it. That's why I wanted to talk about it again.
Yeah, because I lost. I was demonstrating it on the Daily Gizwiz.
Right.
And I didn't have my iPhone with me, so I borrowed a listener, you know, one of our studio audience members' iPhone, and I couldn't get it off, so I had to give him the gimbal. They sent me another one, that was very nice of them.
So anyway, that improvement has made a huge difference. And
awesome.
If you're looking for just the right one to have a tripod and so on and so forth, it's pretty nifty.
And how much would it be for the stuff that they make that is not. Is it all? You get all of that in one kit?
Yeah, I think it's like either $99 or $149, and it's you get all these little bits and pieces. This is the pro version, which is I think as I said, it's.
What is the website for the
gimbal? I think it's UBIC.
UBIC.com.
There we go.
You can get the gimbal there. That's cool. GYMBL.
There you go.
And the Gimbal Pro. Is that a pro? Is that what you got?
The Gimbal Pro, yeah.
That's the pro. Of course it is. Alex never uses anything amateurish. Only the pro.
Yeah, anyway. It's still, I think, the best like all-around mount that you're going to get for your... I mean, if you really want to be able to have something that you can travel with.
Alex Lindsay's at the Pixel Corps, pixelcorps.com. If you want to join that guild of multimedia artists learning, working together.
Please. talk to us. I know we're gonna. No, you don't need to. We're just growing so fast. We just need more members. Who we can.
That's awesome.
We're gonna reopen it.
In other words, you have so much work to do that you need more people to join, so you can give them work.
We don't. Yeah, it's.
So that should be enough incentive to join.
Yeah. So we're a little busy. So
it's a good way to get busy.
I know. So anyway, we're gonna reopen the membership soon. It's been closed for a while because we were doing a lot of some stuff, and so we're gonna. We'll talk about it in the next week or two because we're reopening it specifically because we have so much work. We need more people to absorb it. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. You can also find Alex's podcasts at pixelcore.tv. And every Thursday they do a live stream from pixelcore.com. Almost every Thursday.
Is that busy part that has been killing our internal podcasts?
Out of town.
Yeah. But we're going to be doing a lot more streaming soon. So stay tuned.
Good. We also want to thank Mike Elgin for joining us. He is a regular on Google Plus, or just go to elgin.com. That'll take you to his Google Plus page, and that's where he now creates his newsletter, so you can watch it in process. And then, of course, subscribe to the newsletter so you get it in your mailbox.
That's right. And I'm also on Cult of Mac every week.
That's right. You're doing a lot of that now. That's great.
Yep.
Love that. Cultofmac.com.
Great blog.
Yeah. We love Leander. We love Cult of Mac, and it's great to see you right in there.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Mike. Andy Anatko's at the Chicago Sun-Times and his website, www.cwob.com. But if you're ever at the Boston Public Gardens, look for him and his squirrels, performing squirrels. Andy and his nuts perform nightly.
Oh. Unaffiliated with nutsforsquirrels.org.
Andy, always a pleasure. Thank you for being here. Andy Anatko's Almanac is a regular audio podcast at 5x5. Do you have a live stream of your recording? I know Dan does that with a lot of them.
Yep, that's 5x5 TV/. I'm unprepared for reading a URL. But if you go...
Aren't we all?
5x5.tv/... Live. Let's try it. And what time? Just when do you do it? It is live. When do you do it?
Normally Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern time.
11 a.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. That's 8 a.m. Pacific because you're on the other side on 5x5.tv/live. I'm going to say live.
Live! Oh, live!
You're coming up and I think you're alive now. Live!
That goes Almanac. Hey, thank you all for being here. We do this show 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv every Tuesday. Unless Apple's got an announcement on Wednesday, then we move it to Wednesday, but not in the near future until we get that invitation. And I thank Eileen Rivera, our producer, for not only putting together the rundown, but doing all the work. Look, it's Veronica Belmont behind her. I see it. That must be coming up. She must be coming up on TNT. Look at that. An embarrassment of riches. What else should I say? If you like this show, you'll like iPad Today. I've got to plug the other shows. We do that. Sarah Lane and I do that every Thursday at about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. And we talk about iPad, iPad apps. We show you the latest stuff from the iPad. It's a good time for iPad lovers. iPad Today or either show, Mac Break Weekly or iPad Today. You can get them on our website after the fact, both audio and video available at twit.tv. Or subscribe in iTunes, and you'll get it automatically. And you don't even have to think about it. Thanks for joining us now. Get back to work, 'cause break time is over.